Well, we try to be fair. We saw you come in and sit down. We saw you talking to Didi, and we didn't want to interrupt. We didn't know if this was allowed or if there were ground rules that we were breaking or what. Good morning. Thanks for being with
us. Good morning.
Why did you want to do this, President Clinton? Why did you want to have a radio talk with Don Imus this morning?
Well, I've enjoyed talking with him in the past, and as you pointed out earlier, he did endorse me in the New York primary. He's got an enormous listening audience of people who talk about politics in the course of other things in life. He's also on an all sports radio station, so there are people who listen to him who may not follow every in and out of development here in Washington. So I think it gives me a chance to reach a different sort of audience. And I also think he's an interesting man. I just enjoy doing it.
Mr. President, I understand we're now intruding upon his time, and so we're going to give it on over to Don. Don?
Hello? Well,
thank you very much, Brian.
I can hear him over the television, but not over the telephone. Hello?
Here now for his fourth appearance on the Imus in the Morning program.
Here you are.
The first time as the President of the United States. The President. Good morning, Mr. President.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm all right.
Let me ask you something. What the hell is going on down there in that White House? What do you mean you've lost your focus?
I haven't lost my focus. You've just been seeing me through the foggy lens of television instead of the direct way of radio. There's a big headline in the Washington Post today, Clinton wins third major victory in Congress. I think we're doing fine. You know, we lost one bill, and a lot of people think it's like the last days of Pompeii. I mean, this, if you're going to fight for change, you got to be prepared to lose a few as well as win some. But I think we're well on track. Let me just point out that when the Congress adopted my budget outline, it was the first time in 17 years they'd adopted it within the legal time limit, faster than they moved in 17 years. Everybody complained about the appointments process. When 100 days went by, it turned out I'd made more appointments during the period than my two predecessors did. We just passed the motor voter bill yesterday, a big issue for younger voters, making it easier for them to register to vote. We got the economic program on track. I feel good about the way things are, but it's, you know, change is not easy. And people, if you want to keep score after 100 days, when we had 4,500 days of trickle-down economics, you know, I haven't done everything I meant to do in 100 days, but I never promised to do it in 100 days. I think we're doing fine.
I think that looked good last night, breaking that Republican filibuster, because it looked like Bob Dole had kind of... It's like those Friday the 13th movies, you know, where you think you've finished him off, and then next thing you know, that hand comes popping up out of the lake there. And, of course, in this case, it was a pin in it. But this is an indication that it doesn't look like the Republicans are going to be able to waylay everything you're trying to do, does it?
Well, I don't think so. The filibuster on the jobs bill was an unusual thing, I think. Not that they tried to do it, but that they never let the majority vote. And I think the American people have got that figured out. And there are always going to be Republicans, or most always, that agree with some aspect of what we're doing. And when you reach out with them and to them and you try to work out compromises, there are almost always there are some who want to go for the national interest over the partisanship. And that's what happened here. We worked out some problems with that motor voter bill, and it rolled right through. The same thing with family and medical leave. So I think if we just keep working at it, we'll have some success. We've had 12 cloture votes. That's the attempt to get 60% of the Senate, just so a majority can vote their will. 12 already in the first 3.5 months. I imagine they'll make us do this a lot, but I think there are always going to be some Republicans who want to be part of a bipartisan movement for change, and I'm encouraged by it.
Or Republicans who want to be president.
Well, that's all right. There are always going to be people who want to be president. There's some days I'd like to give it to them. But, you know, if I did that, I at least had to have a telephone conversation with you before I give it up, so you can call me President Bubba. See, I've been waiting for this all this time.
Well, Mr. President, I don't know what you've heard about what's been going on in this program, but it's always been very respectful, and anything you've heard to the contrary would just be further evidence of the collapse of the intelligence community in this country. I mean, these guys didn't even know that the Berlin Wall went down until they saw it on CNN, so you can't trust what you hear from them. Is this, I was talking to my friend Jeff Greenfield over at ABC, and he had a good observation. He said, is this economic program of yours tougher to sell now, you think, because for whatever circumstances you weren't able to run on it?
No, I don't think so. It's the difference in the program that we're advocating and the one I ran on over a 5-year period is not very great. But what happened was, after the election, I want to emphasize this, after the election, the government came out, the previous administration, and said that the deficit was going to be $50 billion a year bigger than they had said before in three of the 4 years of the term that I now occupy. So I had to do more to cut the deficit. We had to put that up front. And it's worked pretty well so far. You know, ever since we announced serious intentions to cut the deficit and were specific about it, interest rates began dropping very steeply. Mortgage rates were at a 20-year low. You're going to have $100 billion, that's a lot of money, in refinancing of home mortgages and business debt and other things, which I think will really help the economy. But that meant we had to put off some of the plans or scale them back in the early going and put them back into the later years of my term to invest money in things that I think are also important. But we've got to get control of this deficit. It's been spinning out of control now, getting worse and worse for a dozen years, and we don't have the funds we need to invest in jobs to grow the economy. And I think it's very important.
Well, I think William Grider pointed out in Rolling Stone, and you either agree with this, obviously, or don't, that during the campaign, that the focus was on, and the debate was on jobs, and it seemed that because of Bush cooking the books and not realizing that the deficit was going to be a little bit bigger than it was, that then the agenda switched to this five-year plan to reduce the deficit. Let me ask you.
Let me make one point. I think there are two sides of the same thing. That is, if I didn't think that reducing the deficit over the long run would help us to create more jobs, and if I didn't think we could also get some increased investment in new technologies and education and training, and to rebuild our cities and to do these things that have to be done, I wouldn't be doing this. I think they're two sides of the same coin. I think until we show we can get control over the government's budget and we can make some spending cuts as well as restore some of the tax losses that we had in the early years of the trickle-down revolution, I don't think we can get a job program going in the country. So I think this getting the deficit down is part of a long-term job growth strategy. Jobs are the issues. Reducing the deficit is a means to get control of our economic future. The whole purpose of it is to put people to work.
To talk about just a second this economic plan, and there's some of these numbers that we see now that suggest that the public is about 50% of them don't think it's going to work. And let me tell you what filters down to people like me, aside from the esoteric proposals and figures and stuff that many of us don't understand. But what we hear is that the numbers we hear is that for every $3 and so in new taxes, we're looking at about a dollar or so in spending cuts. And there are some people that think the ratio is even higher than that. Is that accurate?
No. But I'll tell you, if you look at this thing over a five-year period, we have more spending cuts than we do tax increases. And that's true even though we have some targeted increases in investment in education and training and new technologies. Now, the people who argue this the other way, they play clever games. For example, if you're going to cut a program that's in place, you may have to phase in the cuts over a five-year period. If you raise a tax, you can raise a tax immediately. But if you got to look at this whole budget, in this budget we have more spending cuts and tax increases. We do have some spending increases, but if you don't believe that there are differences in different kind of spending, I don't know what we can do. We have some spending increases to give a nationwide apprenticeship program to help to retrain the workforce. We have some spending increases to get into new technologies to make up for defense cuts because we're losing a lot of high-tech, high-wage jobs. You know, up in Connecticut, we've had a lot of employment dislocation because of defense cutbacks, but you've got a whole high-wage workforce that needs to have something else to do. And every other government in the world is investing in new technologies to try to create those jobs for their people. If we don't do it, we're going to be left behind. So we have to target some investments. But this budget has over 200 very specific budget cuts over the last budget adopted in the previous administration. And if you look, it's a five-year budget. That's what the law requires us to do, to adopt five-year budgets. We got more spending cuts and tax increases in it, and we should.
Now, is it important what the ratio is? And if it is, what should it be, do you think? I mean, because that's the kind of the way we relate to it.
Well, the issue is, how many cuts can you get without throwing the economy into a recession? What do you have to cut? How many cuts can you get without unfairly cutting the elderly? The same people who say we don't have enough cuts are also often saying we shouldn't cut what we're cutting. And the truth is, if you want to get to the balanced budget through spending reductions, the only way to do it now is to get control of health care costs. In the basically in the latter part of this decade, if we can adopt a national health system, and you know Hillary's been working on that with hundreds of others, and we can bring the government's deficit down to zero, but you can't do that overnight. And the biggest part of our deficit growth now is in health care costs and interest on the debt. We're not spending a bigger percentage of our income on Social Security, our national income, than we were 10 years ago. We're spending a smaller percentage of our income on federal aid and education than we were 10, 12 years ago. What's happened now is we started cutting defense, but health care increases overcame the defense cuts. So what I'm trying to do is to cut everything I can now, get health care costs under control, and look toward not only cutting the deficit, but bringing it down to zero over a multi-year period. You just can't do this overnight. You know, we took the national debt from $1 trillion to $4 trillion in 12 years with a $300+ billion a year deficit when I took office. You can't just eliminate that overnight without having serious economic dislocations. You got to do it in a disciplined way and take it down.
Already been some compromise with some members of your own party in Congress. Do you anticipate any more of that, or is it?
Well, I think there have been some changes that make it better. After all, we put this plan on the table only 30 days after I'd taken office. And I invited people to comment on it, but to keep its essential features intact. That is, we had to have the spending cuts before I would agree to tax increases. Mm-hmm. The tax increases had to be largely progressive. That is, they ought to be on people at higher income levels whose tax rates went down in the 1980s while their incomes went up. That we ought to have an earned income tax credit. That's taxpayer jargon for giving a tax break to working class people with children, particularly, who'd be especially hard hit by the energy tax. And that affects people with incomes up to about $29,000 a year. So they'll get an offset on their income tax to make up for the energy tax. And that there ought to be some incentives for investment in the American economy, either mine or some others. And we emphasize small business, and we emphasize new plant and equipment for big business. And those things are all going to be in the ultimate tax package. So I feel good about it. I think that, you know, the changes that are being made, basically, at least so far, the ones that have been discussed with me, don't in any way undermine the fundamental principles of the tax program and the spending cut program I laid out.
There's a dramatic picture of you and an agonizing Lyndon Johnson on the cover of the current issue of Time magazine, asking the question if Bosnia is going to be your Vietnam. One, let me ask you, do you think it has that potential? And two, what is the United States policy in Bosnia?
Well, let me answer the first question. There are similarities to Vietnam in the sense that there is a civil war, and there is a national dividing line that is between Bosnia and Serbia, which doesn't fully coincide with the ethnic cohesion of the Serbs in Bosnia and Serbia. Same thing on the other end of the country with Croatia and Bosnia-Herzegovina. It's a very complicated thing. Those folks have been fighting with each other for a long time. There are also some differences, however. You have the continuation of a principle of ethnic cleansing that you didn't have in Vietnam, people getting killed or raped just because of their religion, just because they're Muslims, and because of their historic conflict in that area. And you have a United Nations resolution, which has, in effect, given a military victory to the Serbians. That is, the UN imposed an arms embargo, which had the effect of opening up to the Serbs the entire arms cache of the Yugoslav army and denying weapons to the Bosnian Muslims and, to a lesser extent, to the Croatians. So the international community has been involved. The third and the big difference from the point of view of the average Americans is I've made it very clear that the United States, unlike Vietnam, is not about to act alone and should not act alone. This is a European issue. It's an issue for the world community to address. And we have worked very carefully with our allies to make the sanctions tougher and to keep the pressure on to try to do two things, to contain the conflict and to try to put an end to the slaughter. And our policy is that it is in the United States' national interest to keep this conflict from spilling over into a lot of other countries, which could drag the United States into something with NATO that we don't want. And
the president has chosen to extend the time that he had allotted with Don Imus, and so we're going to extend the time that we can show it to you, but we do have to take a break for our stations along the line here, so we'll come back in just a moment. 51 past. Try to eavesdrop as much as possible.
WFAN radio.
Radio, I'm sorry.
We're TV, they're radio.
But, but we still do have to conduct some business. We'll take another break. This is Today on NBC. With Don Imus.
When I run here in town, I average probably about an 8.5 minute mile. But, you know, but I can run it faster. On the Valentine's Day, the vice president and I did 2.5 miles in a heart association run at about 7.5 minutes a mile.
Well, that's terrific. Mr. President, thank you very much. Thanks for coming on and good luck.
Thanks. Talk to you again, I hope.
Bill Clinton here on the IBIS Morning Program.
When we get in double digits, I'll call you back.
It's 8 o'clock. I'm going to be
sunshine and cloud. We apologize because we had to dump out part of that time when you were talking about Bosnia. Let me just ask you one quick question before you get away. In the absence of stronger, more decisive action by our European allies, how much longer after the referendum of this weekend are you willing to wait before you have to do something, even if that something is unilateral?
Well, keep in mind, I don't think we can do anything that is unilateral because we are there involved already as part of a United Nations effort. That is, the United Nations has set the framework for our involvement. The United States has been very active in enforcing the sanctions and providing information there to the people on the ground and doing the airdrops. I think there are some things that we're going to be able to do with our allies that will continue to turn the pressure up. But this is a European issue as well as a world issue. And I think we have to move forward with Europe. I have been pushing a certain course of action. I think that you'll see over the next few days that we'll be able to take some more steps that will make peace more likely and will make the confining of the conflict more likely. And that's just what we're going to keep doing. We just got to keep pushing ahead. It is a very, very difficult issue. But I think that that we're pushing in the right direction, going in the right direction. And I think the American people will support the combination of clear, disciplined restraint on our part and not creating a unilateral American involvement, but continuing to push to end the slaughter, end the ethnic cleansing, and confine the conflict so that it doesn't cause us a lot more problems.
Mr. President, as I thank you, I'm aware that our agreement is limited to one question, so at 8:02, I'll just take the opportunity to invite you back whenever you can, whenever you have a moment. We'd love to see you here.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.